This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
5 inches of snow in my town.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what they do, and this upsets me and this frustrates me. They double plow. And somebody called yesterday and said the double plow is necessary when there's a lot of snow. But I don't think 5 inches falls into the category of a lot of snow where he'd have to come, do like the first portion, and then come back and do the second portion. Because then you know what he does. He charges twice.
Yeah.
I don't want the double plow today.
This is DCR.
I don't understand why you don't change companies then.
The same reason you don't change landscapers.
I mean, you have a landscaper knocking down trees. Didn't he break your sprinklers?
Yeah, he breaks the sprinklers, yeah.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, DCR with you. It's the big 7 o'clock hour on a Friday, and we're presented, of course, by Progressive Insurance. All guests on DCR, PRV, the Goodyear Hotline. Tim Legler in about 26 minutes from right now. So here's the question. I'll pose it to both of you, and I want to get the calls lined up as well at 800-919-3776 on where we are with the Jets and what you'd like to do, and if it's Wilson. And Watson seems like the obvious play, although it seems like it's not going to happen at this very moment. Would you rather be Wentz or would you rather be Darnold? Would you rather be the guy, Chris, that has done it and then falled off and you're not sure if he can do it again, or the guy that has all the hope and potential but just hasn't done, really, for lack of a better term, anything at this point of his career?
I think it all depends on where your team is at, Dave. I mean, if you're the Colts, I would probably lean toward a guy like Carson Wentz just because I've got a team that's ready to win now. And I don't necessarily want to grow with a young guy that's still trying to figure it out. Like with Carson Wentz, at least we've seen the production. With Sam Darnold, we haven't seen that. We're just basing it on the potential he had coming out of SC. So, I mean, I think it all depends on the circumstances, but I mean, with Sam Darnold, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt just because of how dysfunctional the Jets organization was. So I think there are a lot of teams around the National Football League that are interested in him because they still believe in the sheer talent that he has.
Yeah, you don't want to fall off. I mean, that's tough when you fall off.
You know what? At least I know something about you.
I mean, really? Off with the first question.
You don't even know me.
I didn't want to play
all this. You're my work wife and all that stuff. That couldn't be further from the truth. You don't even know the first thing about me. So yeah, I have a slip of the tongue as far as a word is concerned. Fine, but at least I know who you are.
First question shut me down. Completely lost interest in the game. It was way too tough of a first question. Anyway, as far as Carson Wentz is concerned, I mean, are you asking which quarterback you would rather be or which quarterback you would rather have?
I'm saying what would you rather be, like, in the NFL as a player? Would you rather be the guy that's got the potential that's never accomplished anything, or would you rather be the guy that's been almost to the top of the mountain and has fallen off to where he is now?
I would rather be right now as we sit today in Carson Wentz's situation. He's already been paid.
Right.
He's shown he could play at an MVP level, and now I get to be reunited with Frank Reich, who actually, I mean, got the best out of me. And I'm on a team that's ready to win now. I mean, that's not a bad place to be.
It's not.
From where he was.
And you got to figure if there's any way that he can be saved, this would be it, right?
This is it. This is the perfect situation for him. If there's a chance to save Carson Wentz, this will be the spot.
All right, let me go one further with you guys. And we'll start with Rick, and then we'll move over to Chris. And that is, if you're the Jets, who would you rather have? Would I guess, in essence, if you were the Jets, would you trade Sam Darnold for Carson Wentz right now?
If I was the Jets, would I trade?
You're the Jets and you could trade Darnold for Wentz, have the new quarterback and move forward with him. Would you do it?
No. We're not ready to win. We're not ready to win yet. And on top of it, Mike LaFleur does not have a relationship with Carson Wentz. No. I mean, why am I sinking draft picks and money into Carson Wentz when he's got no ties to anyone in my organization at all.
You have the second overall pick. So if you want a new quarterback, you can just go draft a quarterback this year.
Or a running back, whatever you decide to do with the second overall.
Yeah, that's a great place to go.
See, Dave, now I understand why you want to
take that. There's Exhibit A.
There was no reason to bring the Giants in this conversation at all. None whatsoever. But anyway.
Giants fans feel left out. We've just been talking about Jets.
No, we don't. You know what? Because at the moment, we feel like we're functional and heading in the right direction. That's what we feel like.
Yeah, it's hard to argue.
We don't have to be the constant topic of conversation like you guys have to steal the attention constantly.
We like to be in the spotlight. We like the back page.
Yeah, you guys are like the Kyrie Irving of sports talk.
Yeah, with a sizzle. We like the sizzle.
You're the walking stick.
The walking stick.
Of sports talk radio.
I do it for the loves.
That's what we need. Like, once whoever we – if we draft Zach Wilson with the second overall pick, we need Kyrie to walk up like in The Lion King. Like Rafiki comes up with a walking stick. And present, I want him to hold up Zach Wilson.
That's what I want.
Deshaun Watson. I'll get Deshaun Watson his own walking stick if he wants.
Oh, you would make him a walking stick.
He could use me as the walking stick if he wants.
He could.
You give him a piggyback ride from Houston?
I'll carry listen, however he wants me to carry him.
Would you get a here's the question for you. A tattoo of Deshaun Watson.
No.
You wouldn't do it?
No. No. I would get a tattoo of you. I'd get a tattoo of Chris. I would not get a tattoo of someone I don't even know.
You didn't even let me finish the question. Deshaun Watson gets traded to the Jets and leads you to the Super Bowl in 3 years.
No.
But you wouldn't get a Deshaun Watson tattoo mid-back?
No.
I mean, you're a tattoo guy.
I'm a tattoo guy. The tattoos I have on my body have significant meaning to me.
You have a tattoo of your father-in-law on your body.
He's my father-in-law.
Okay, but this is a guy that would lead your team to a championship.
I don't know Deshaun Watson.
Okay, so if Deshaun Watson does get traded to the Jets and we do facilitate a meeting and they do win a Super Bowl, then would you feel comfortable getting a tattoo?
No, we'd have to become close friends.
Well, I mean, as long as you don't have the Todd Gurley type of interaction when you first meet him, I think there's the potential for that because you're a very charismatic guy.
And he's supposed to be a great guy.
Exactly.
I can't believe this. I can't believe there's not even any thought of you going for the tattoo.
Yeah, I'm not doing a tattoo. That's for life. Man.
Could be the sticking point, though, man. He could be like, you know what? If DiPietro doesn't get the tattoo, I'm not going to waive the no trade clause.
Well, if that's the case, now that's a different story.
I will waive the no trade clause if Rick gets the tattoo of me mid back.
Yeah, that's fine. If he verbalizes that and that's what he says, and then all of a sudden because I get the tattoo of him, now we forge this like really close relationship where when we do win the Super Bowl, I get invited to the Super Bowl party. Absolutely. That's not even a question.
So that you would do?
That I would do. Like, for example, if we finish first somehow in one of these books, I would get a big giant tattoo of you and Canty to commemorate the moment.
I'd like that.
I know you would.
I'd like even more than the bonus. I would appreciate that. Let's go to Joe. Joe the Plow Guy is next up on 98.7.
What's up, morning, fellas?
What's up, Joe? How are you?
Good, boss man. Just want to make sure you know I just finished putting about a 6-foot pile of snow right at the end of the driveway for you.
You don't know where I live. Joe. You're full of it. You didn't do that.
No, I'm just messing around, Dave. I just want to make sure you stop talking so much about the Plow Guys. You know, we're out all night. But no, he should be down probably one pass with 5 inches, my man.
That's my point, Joe.
6 to 8 inches, you should be about two. But with five, you should be able to get that in one pass.
And that's all I'm saying. I just want honesty and honor in the Plow Guy. That's all I'm looking for.
If you're on Long Island, you'll get one pass.
Yeah, once you start talking six to eight, now all of a sudden, there's got to be at least two involved.
Hey, man, I've been saying it a long time. Six to eight. Circles. I just wanted to say I love listening to you guys. I appreciate it. I'm happy you picked up finally. Thank you very much, man. But, you know, we're always out there. I just want to say it's great to hear from you guys in the morning always.
It's great to hear from you, Joe. And thanks for all the work that you do. You think the Plow community, they probably don't
like
me now, right?
No, they hate you completely.
I'm great with vendors. Yeah.
Which makes no sense because they're actually up doing their job while we're on the radio.
Well, it's not like I hate the Plow. Yeah. I want it to be understood. And for the record, I don't dislike the Plow community. I dislike the dishonest people in the Plow community that are looking for the double score.
Yes,
I don't want the double Plow today. I don't want it.
Why don't you have a conversation? It's a simple conversation. Hey, listen, just explain to me why exactly we're doing the double pass.
I shovel.
Because I'd rather not have the double pass. It doesn't seem like it makes much sense to me to do the double pass.
Well, here's what I've decided. If he does the double Plow today, I'm only paying for one. If I receive the invoice and it has the double Plow, I'm not paying for two Plows. I'll pay for the Plow. I'll pay for whatever the salt he puts down. I'm not paying for the double.
Good for you, Dave.
I'm not doing it.
Draw your line in the snow. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
That's right.
Yeah. And then you're not going to get your driveway plowed ever.
Well, we're almost done with this. I hope.
Are we?
By the time I get the bill and it's expected to be paid, I'm hoping we'll be out on the other side of this thing.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want the double Plow today. You look disgusted with me.
I am disgusted. I mean, this is first of all, it's as simple as just go do it yourself if you don't want to pay any money for it. Otherwise, yeah, have a conversation. You don't want to do that. And now, I mean, you're going to – he'll ply you twice, which is how he thinks it should be done. No one else is complaining about you.
Excuse me? What?
Which I give him credit for that kind of stamina.
And then, yes, I don't want the double plow today.
What do you think is going to happen now? You pay for one plow and he plowed you twice. What do you think is going to happen now?
He can sue me.
He's not going to sue you. All that, he's going to mess with you now. So all that snow that he's plowing from your neighbor's driveway, he's going to put right in front. He's going to put it right back in your driveway.
Then I'll sue him.
You can't sue him.
I'll sue him if he's going to put unwarranted snow in front of my driveway. I'm going to sue him
for what? Punitive damages? Where you saw Rosenberg all of a
sudden?
That's
right. My shoes, my glasses, all of it. I'm going to sue him.
I'm going to sue you.
No, I'll sue you.
I think this whole thing is ridiculous.
I'm great with vendors.
No, you're not. That's the question now. I'm starting to question if you're good with vendors.
Very good with the vendor.
He's not in charge of this particular vendor.
This is
though,
not
Rico.
My plow guy.
It's the other neighbor.
Yeah.
That's bullying him essentially into using this.
Essentially,
plow guy.
He is.
Yeah.
There's a bully situation going on here, and because I'm so benign and I'm not looking for arguments with the neighbors, I'm like, whatever you want is fine.
I'm buying you a snowblower.
Okay.
It's the price you pay when you live in a bougie neighborhood and you don't get to make your own decisions.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess there's been a lot of conjecture and conversation about the greatest athletes of all time, the most dominant, greatest athletes of all time. And lists are now emerging. So you want to hear a couple of lists here? I have them in front of me. The NFL.com list, and I don't know who actually participated, how many people it was that did this on NFL.com. They have Brady 1, of course, they go NFL, Michael 2, Gretzky 3, Woods 4, Serena 5. That's their list. How do you feel about that list, Chris?
That's a strong list, Dave. That's a strong list. I mean, that would be pretty close to the list that I would come up with, save one person on that list. But I mean that's pretty good.
Now you feel good with Brady, the top athlete in the history of sport?
No, I don't. But I mean, football is the most popular sport in North America, and so I think they're just leading with that. You got to consider the source. It's NFL.com. But I mean, listen, when you start talking about the top five, I mean, it's hard to parse through any of these when you start trying to power rank them, Dave. It really is.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, there's never a list you're going to look at, Rick, you're going to be like, this is just, unless it's awful, like, you're going to have the biggest names in the history of sport on your list.
Yeah, but I mean, that's when you start talking about greatest. I mean, that's, you end up, I mean, it's, some of it's preference, but it's also, I mean, it's the margin for, you know, your decision making is so close. And what do you value? I was watching First Take yesterday. I know you have Steven's list and Max's.
I do. Mean, yeah.
So Steven took into account, you know, certain things that, you know, Max and Lewis didn't take into account. And that's how he made his list.
Which is what? Like impact off the field or away from
impact,
the ring or whatever?
Circumstances, you know, what they to be as successful as they were with the situations that they were in and what they were dealing with at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you'd have to. So Steven has Muhammad Ali 1, which I think if you're going to go Ali, which I think is fine, then your criteria has to be what he did outside the ring and what he meant for social justice and what he meant as far as a larger-than-life figure. Because if you're solely looking at it at athleticism, I don't think Muhammad Ali is number one.
But I don't know about that, Dave.
Too. I mean, he's right up there.
I mean, yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean, just think about what he – I mean, just when you hear – if someone just asked you off the cuff, and you were a sports fan, you weren't just strictly a boxing fan. Greatest boxer of all time. Who would you say?
I think Joe Louis would jump out there.
You don't think that a large percentage of people would say first name that came to mind was Muhammad Ali?
Oh, I think it would be, absolutely.
I mean, the effect he had on sports in general.
But that's my point. I think he was a larger-than-life figure as well. I don't think it was solely that he was just a great boxer. I think there are bigger issues at play with Muhammad Ali.
But I think part of it is he transcended the sport of boxing.
Yes, he did.
And I think when you're talking greatest of all time, I think that has to be part of the conversation. Like, did
you put together a list quickly, or is that not something you're ready and or capable of doing at the moment?
No, let's list it up.
All right, because I don't have a list. But if you have something that you'd like to go with, let me quickly go through Stephen A's and Kellerman's, and then you'll give yours if you'd like. So Stephen A has Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, Serena, Bill Russell, and Tom Brady. All right, that's Stephen A. And then Max says, Michael, Babe Ruth. And the fact that Babe Ruth is on one of the three lists that I have in front of me is kind of surprising. Muhammad Ali, Serena, and Tom Brady. So let me just point out, one of the three lists has Wayne Gretzky on it, and one of the three has Babe Ruth on it. But Rick, if you have yours, I'd love to hear it.
Whose list has Wayne Gretzky on it?
NFL.com.
Okay.
NFL.com, yeah.
No, NFL, Wayne Gretzky has to be on a list.
He has to be.
I mean, just look at his, I mean, there are things that Wayne Gretzky's done that no one will ever do again. Ever do again. I mean, Ovechkin will get to the goals, I think. But
no one will get to the points.
No. No one's going to get to the points. So Gretzky's got to be on that list. I'm going to have Tom Brady on the list. I mean, he's got more Super Bowl championships than franchises have Super Bowl championships, which is not meant to happen in the NFL.
No. It's not meant to happen in any sport, that a player should have more titles than teams.
I got Jordan on my list.
Yeah.
I got Babe Ruth on my list.
Don't you have to put Babe Ruth on the list?
I think you have to.
You don't have Chris, do you?
In Stevens' list, I could put, like, I could see if you're going to put a baseball player on Stevens' list for how the criteria, his list, I would probably put Hank Aaron on Stevens' list.
Yeah, you could. Or Jackie Robinson on that list.
But Hank Aaron was, I mean, one of the best we've ever seen do it. But I just think when you hear, Babe Ruth is, I mean, he's a larger than life. He's almost like Babe Ruth has almost like become a fictional character.
Babe Ruth, it was 100 years ago. Right? I mean, he was 100 years ago. And if you ask any kid, we talk about baseball and popularity and how it's fallen off and people don't care anymore. If you say to any kid, Babe Ruth, they know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. And how do you feel about putting soccer players on the list?
I feel okay. I mean, I think they're worthy of going. What do you want to put, Pele?
I mean, just Pele? I mean, Pele, he's approaching that list.
I think you have to define your criteria.
Yeah. I just don't have enough data points to put a hockey guy on the list. I mean, not a hockey guy, a soccer guy.
Soccer player?
Soccer player on the list, yeah. I mean, with hockey, I think it's clear. Like, Gretzky is, like, head and shoulders above anybody else. Like, there's nobody close. And then when you start putting together these GOAT lists, I mean, a part of it is just, like you guys are saying, the recognition of it. I mean, you just use one name and you can talk about it, like Gretzky or Jordan or Ali. I mean, it's, you know, you know that Serena, like you know them from that one name, Tiger. I mean, that's got to matter. I mean, their influence and their reach beyond the sport that they're in is a part of how you got to quantify, you know, the greatest of all time.
I think you got to put Serena on the list, too.
For Serena has to be on the list. Has
I don't
to.
Think, Dave, can you, I mean, you're a tennis guy. You once hit an 8-year-old child in the face with a tennis racket. So, I mean, I think you qualify. I mean, is there anyone close? Like in female
close?
Tennis, is there anyone close? In female tennis, is there anyone close?
Yeah, I do think there's close. I don't think there's anyone at the level. I think Martina is close. I think Chris Everett is close. And I think Steffi Graf is close.
But you can't, like, the reason why I ask close is because, like, Tiger has transcended golf.
Yes.
Yes.
But the thing you would hold against Tiger is he has not won as many majors as Jack Nicklaus.
Correct. She has more majors than anyone has ever had. But do you remember Martina? Martina was sensational.
Well, she was phenomenal. But look what we're dealing with right now. I mean, Serena was devastated that she lost to Osaka because it's like I think it was like she realized like, okay, at my age, the amount of work I'm going to have to put in to stay at this level, and oh by the way, this level is not as good as Naomi Osaka's level.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough to. That's
and Osaka's the best player in the world. It's not,
exactly.
You know, it's funny because the way Serena reacted is as if she's bad. You know, like she lost in the first round to the 134th player in the world. Serena is still great. She went to the semifinals of a major. She's 39 and she lost to a player that at this point is just better than her. There's no shame in that.
No, there's no shame. But that's, I mean, as an athlete, you got to understand. Like when you finally kind of see the writing on the wall as to this may be it, that's a traumatic experience. They say athletes die two deaths. You go from being the most dominating player in your sport to now all of a sudden realizing, like, this may be it for me. I'm sure Roger Federer is going through the same thing right now when he looks at what Djokovic is doing and what Nadal's still doing. Yeah, I mean, you go, like think about if you're Roger Federer right now. With, I mean, now he's dealt with injuries and everything else, but
right.
I mean, how good do you feel about him winning another major?
I don't think he will.
Okay, so that's
I hope
he does.
I'd love for him to at least win another Wimbledon, but I can't. I wouldn't bet on that. I don't think he will.
No, we love him. Tiger Woods, same thing. I mean, in all reality, Tiger Woods' real chance to win another major is only going to be the Masters.
Does this have to be a criterion? Again, I don't know what it is. I guess it's personal preference. Like, when I say this sport, you have to think of this guy first?
I think that goes into it.
Yeah, that's right? A part. Yeah, that's baked in there.
I think you got to bake that into it.
Yeah.
So I say soccer. I mean, here's the thing with the defense of soccer, and I'm not a soccer guy, but I say greatest soccer player of all time, and it's the most popular sport in the world. How do you not at least consider Pelé to be on the list?
I think you have to. I think you have to consider him. I mean, Pelé would be close. I mean, Pelé might just be on the outside looking in just because I'm not a soccer. I'm not, you know, soccer's not one of my favorite sports.
Yeah, but none of us are. But you recognize the greatness of Pelé.
Yes, but I got to cut it down to five.
Yeah, you do.
I'm cutting it down to five.
Let's quickly go to Jason in Jersey City. Jay, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. Hey, I think you, Dave, that mentioned earlier, like, you know, the criteria, because you're looking at greatest champion versus greatest athlete, which are two different categories, right? So, I mean, you know, Tiger Woods, a great champion of his sport, but I, as far as athletic ability compared to, like, Serena or even LeBron James, just no way.
Yeah, but we're not doing athletic ability. Tom Brady is not the best athlete.
No.
He might be the worst.
And that's just it, right? Because the list you guys said was, like, greatest athlete. So, like, I mean, greatest champion?
The greatest person in sports, greatest athlete of all time. That's what we're talking about.
I meant, like, the greatest. I didn't mean actually who's the greatest physical athlete to ever, you know, put on a uniform or go into the ring or go onto the court.
Greatest in sport, yeah.
Yeah.
When you start talking about greatest athletes, that's a completely different conversation. Now you got to bring, I mean, Deion Sanders has to be in that conversation. Athletically.
Yeah.
Bo Jackson.
You can start talking about Jim Brown as the greatest athlete of all time.
Jim Brown has to be in that conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely he does.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Rick, I have some news which I think will please you. Are you ready, my friend?
Oh, yeah. Give it to me, baby.
All right, according to Andy Martino, the Mets have a deal in place with starting pitcher Taiwan Walker.
It changes everything. Are you kidding me now with this rotation, David?
Think about this rotation. If and when Syndergaard comes back, we're looking at the best pitcher in baseball. You're looking at Carrasco. You're looking at Walker. You're looking at Syndergaard. And you're looking at Stroman. Beat that.
I don't think you can. You'd be hard-pressed top to bottom to beat that. Hard-pressed, especially if Syndergaard comes back and he is the Syndergaard that we've seen. A little bit more consistent, hopefully, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. Still would like to fix the bullpen.
I agree with you on that. One
more arm in the bullpen.
But Chris, I really feel like this is, I mean, people don't realize how good this guy is. He's 28 years old. He pitched to a 2.7 ERA last year.
No, he's a good pitcher, man. He's a good pitcher. But the role that you're putting him in, Dave, I mean, you're talking about him being a back end of the rotation guy. If he slots in as your fourth or fifth pitcher, how much of an advantage is that going to be for the Mets going up against the opposing team's fourth or fifth pitcher?
Like,
that's what makes it crazy, man. I mean, as a Mets fan, you got to feel good about this. Like, this is one of those sneaky good moves that makes you feel that much better about the offseason that the Mets have had.
The Mets are going to be that team. And we see that occasionally around baseball where you're like, they don't have a weak starting pitcher. Like, every day you throw out a legitimate starting pitcher. Every day. I mean, right now, if I asked you, you look at the rotation, David Peterson could be on the outside looking in. Lucchese, who's not awful, on the outside looking in. Who's the worst starter of this five when Syndergaard comes back?
Dave, I mean, you're talking about a team now with this rotation on top of the fact that offensively, and they were good last year offensively, got better with the addition of Lindor.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Alonso was bad last year, and they were good offensively. If he bounces back?
Yep.
But what you're saying is you trust the Pacoda rankings just a little bit more.
No, I think those rankings are asinine.
No, I'm just trying to get a read on Ricky.
82 is ridiculous to me. Ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think right now, I mean, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but when you look at the NL East, whew.
The big signing. This is a hell of a division.
I got to put them right. I mean, you have to put them right there. I don't know how you don't.
I think you have to. Now, for all the ones who get it done, Grainger is always there to help. Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, 24/7 support, free access to product specialists and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop on by. And the rotation, I mean, you know, you were talking about, I think it was just yesterday, when you said you're a little frustrated and somewhat annoyed, but it sounds like you're singing a far different tune with the signing of Walker.
Yeah, I mean, weren't you frustrated?
I don't think as much as you, because I still looked at this as a positive offseason, but I do feel a lot better about it right now. I don't know how you couldn't. I mean, look at the starting rotation. I think you could say it's the best starting rotation in baseball right now, if and when Syndergaard comes back healthy.
I don't disagree with you. But my frustration wasn't because of the fact that the Mets didn't have a good offseason. I felt like it was more of a missed opportunity, that there was that one or two piece. I mean, that was that one piece that if all of a sudden you get, now we're talking about the Mets as the team that should win the NL East and can, you know, can go up, maybe not as good as the Dodgers, but in a series, you never know what's going to happen because they're right there. I think this move now, I mean, to solidify the rotation the way that they just did with Walker, you're not going to find a better. You're not going to.
You're not.
One through five.
The guy pitched to a 2.70 ERA. I mean, he's had a 2.61 ERA. He's 28 years old. He's had a 3.6 ERA. He's had two seasons over four, and not way over four. But we'll get back to the Mets in a couple minutes. 800-919-3776. The NBA report powered by Mercedes-Benz of White Plains, a proud member of the Pepe Auto Group and the Macallan Double Cask 12-year-old single malt scotch. Let's bring him in. NBA insider Tim Legler joins us here now on 98.7 ESPN. Tim, we appreciate a couple minutes. I know you're jumping from SportsCenter right into this show, so certainly appreciate all the hard work. Let's get right to it. I mean, last night it's another Nets win. They beat up on the Lakers. They look terrific. I mean, what's your take on where we are with the Nets and the fact that when they play a good team, they've had their way with those good teams?
Yeah, they really have. And let me start by saying, I don't know if you guys are as disappointed as I am right now. And just it seems like every time we get one of these marquee matchups, that teams aren't even close to full strength. It's rare anymore that you get two elite teams playing each other and everybody's on the court. And the reason it's disappointing is because as an analyst, you're trying to watch because you really want to see how these teams stack up against each other and use them as a barometer against the best in the league. Obviously, that wasn't the case last night, but there are some takeaways, particularly in the part of Brooklyn that you look at and say, wow, you know, how are teams supposed to deal with this? And particular, look at this West Coast trip for this team. They just made 81 three-pointers in four games. They shot 49% from the three-point line in doing that. Just absurd numbers. They broke a record for most threes in a three-game span made, probably in a four-game span also. I don't think anybody did the research on that one, but 49% as well. So what's happening is they're starting to include the rest of their roster. And I think early on they were feeling each other out of when, who was going to be the alpha, when is I going to attack. They were getting more into their own offense. Now that ball is hopping around the perimeter. They're making extra passes. And it's really a beautiful thing to watch because they've got elite guys that can attack the rim. They've got the great mid-range players with KD and Kyrie. And now when you start throwing in Joe Harris and TLC and Shamit and the different guys they have that are just waiting to tee up these open three-point shots and shoot it at that rate, there is no possible way any team has enough defensively to deal with what they're doing to you right now on that end of the floor. So for me, that's the biggest takeaway, the evolvement of this team and the evolution of the ball sharing and the extra pass. And when they do that and they get clean looks, there's just nothing that anybody can come up with in terms of game plan or effort that's going to be able to slow them down.
So, Tim, in saying all that, what, if anything, can stop them from getting to the NBA Finals? And is there a team in the East, matchup-wise, that you think could give this Brooklyn Nets team trouble?
So, prior to this, the way their offense looks now, like if you'd asked me this question 2 weeks ago, defensively, they just didn't care as much 2 weeks ago. They did not help each other when they were beat off the dribble on penetration. They weren't flooding to the lane and then flying out and trying to contest shots. They're never going to be an elite defensive team, okay? But they at least need to be average most nights and then be able to turn it up when they need to in big moments. They weren't doing that 2 weeks ago. The other thing they weren't doing, they were not making the extra pass a couple of weeks ago. So if you'd have asked me that question then, I would have said, yeah, I'm not sold yet. What I'm seeing right now, there's nobody in the East that can deal with this team. There's just nobody. If they just play with, you know, sustained effort defensively, even if they're not great schematically, just care a little bit more. And that's what I've been seeing out of them. They forced 9 turnovers in the third quarter last night, and most of those were forced turnovers. They were not, you know, just careless mistakes by the Lakers. They were multiple white jerseys flying to the ball, raking with active hands, getting on the defensive glass, and then getting out in the open floor. So when they just care to that extent, they're going to be good enough defensively that they know on the other end of the floor they're a serious problem when they share the basketball. So right now I look at teams like Philly, I look at Milwaukee, you know, I look at a team like Miami, and you say, you know, is that really going to be enough to deal with this? And my answer is no. And all of those teams have their own issues. Even at their best, they're incomplete. If the Brooklyn Nets play their best, there is no hole. And so that's why, yeah, clearly to me, they're rounding into a team now that you look at and say, not only can they get to the finals, that's a team that's going to win an NBA championship. If they continue to stay healthy, share the basketball, and just give me, you know, maximum sustained effort defensively, it's a wrap for me in the Eastern Conference. It really is. I just don't think these other teams have enough firepower.
Tim, in saying that, I mean, I know the Nets have had a lot of success, especially when they go with their small lineup and put Jeff Green at center. They have a lot of success offensively. But spinning it forward to whatever team comes out of the West, whether it ends up being the Lakers or the Jazz, I mean, is it a situation that you can potentially be concerned with their matchup with their frontline size versus those teams' frontline size? If it is or if it isn't, please just give me a little insight on as to how you see it.
No, I think it's a fair question, and I think the Lakers would be the only team that we're talking about here, because mm-hmm. the Lakers can put lineups out there that not only are big, they're also incredibly versatile yep. in the way that they can attack you and beat you. If you got LeBron at the 3, AD at the 4, and put a center out there, you know they can do things from a size standpoint up front no other team in the league can do because of the skill of those guys. Having said that, you know, when I look at Brooklyn and, you know, their small lineup, here's the difference between their small lineup and most of the small ball type teams we've seen in the past. Most of those teams either had to get to the rim or it was a 3-point shot. That's not the case with this team. You've got two of the best mid-range scorers this league has ever seen in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So most small ball teams you could prepare for in a 7-game series. You could make adjustments to figure out a way to play ball screen, stay home with shooters. You know, make James Harden, when he was in Houston, beat you by getting to the line 20 times and hitting a bunch of shots at the rim and take away the 3-point shot. Or you say, okay, we're going to load up on James Harden, and eventually the percentages will drop on the 3-point shot. Well, what do you do then when you've also got two guys that can take you 15 to 20 feet from the rim off the dribble and make a shot over anybody with a hand in their face? Because that's what we're talking about with that final component. That's what most of the small ball teams have lacked offensively. So, yeah, the rebounding would be a concern against a big team. You know, defensively, certain matchups. But I think if they just play as hard as they did last night and they care about each other on that end of the floor and don't hang guys out to dry, they're so good offensively that just by being a little bit better defensively, that's going to be good enough, in my opinion, no matter who they play. Now, look, I need to see the Lakers play that team full strength. So that's what's frustrating about last night. No KD, no AD, no Dennis Schroeder. Seems like every time I get a marquee matchup, that's what it looks like. You know, half the guys aren't out there that you need to see. So it's frustrating because you really don't know until they have Anthony Davis on the floor against this team. But from what I'm seeing with the Nets right now, the way they're shooting the basketball with their role players, the way that these three guys seem like they're buying into playing together, and then the increased effort on the other end, I don't know how any team in the East is going to be able to beat this team in a 7-game series. The Lakers, that remains to be seen. I need to see them at full strength against this team and see if that size does play a huge factor. It's hard to tell when AD's not out there.
All right, Tim, thanks for validating what I've been telling these guys for about 10 days or 2 weeks at this point. I appreciate that. Tim Legler with us here, 98.7 ESPN. How about the Knicks? Almost got to 500. They were a game away, and a win in Orlando would have done that for them. But they've played so well this year, and they've gotten production from Quickly. And, I mean, you know who they've gotten production from. So what's your take on this team right now? They're two games under, and they've really outdistanced expectations so far this season.
They really have, and I think for me, you know, it's funny, the word culture is used all the time, and it sounds so cliche sometimes, and people don't know, you know, what exactly are you talking about here when you're talking about culture? Well, I can tell you simply with the Knicks, this is a team that's playing harder. You know, if I pulled up basically any game from a year ago and we just popped in a couple of tapes next to each other, two TVs, and you're looking and you're watching, it's a noticeable difference in how hard they are playing defensively. And we know Tom Thibodeau is known for that. But the question is, you know, what were these younger players going to buy into that? And he's getting them to. When you watch them now, you know, they fight over screens. They're more physical on that end. Julius Randle has been fantastic offensively with what he's done for them. Quickly's obviously been a great find for them. But for me, it's really just about the eye test of this team is playing harder. And when you play hard every night, even if you've got some offensive limitations, and even if you've got even schematically your offense isn't anything special, just play harder and give yourselves a chance. I was really disappointed the other night with the Orlando game because, you know, they're starting to get some talk and like, wow, you know, you win this game, the next two, you got two lottery teams potentially, you know, can you get over 500? And then they really kind of lay an egg against Orlando offensively, frustrating. But that's where they are in terms of their talent on that end of the floor. They're going to be inconsistent. They don't have guys that are going to be really efficient the way that they score. So you're going to have to get it done by being a hard-nosed team, and that's what they are. And it's been a breath of fresh air to watch them compete at that level. And it looks like they're having fun and they're buying into it. So it's been a good story this year for sure.
Tim Legler joins us here on the show. Tim, Lakers question, because I know Canty's probably going to ask you anyway, but I want to ask for him because he's a huge Lakers fan. How concerned are you with the Anthony Davis injury? And is there a team in the West that could stand in the way of the Lakers getting back to the finals?
Not if he's out 4 weeks. Now, my concern is, you know, is it going to be 4 weeks? This was a scary episode for them because you're talking about an area of your body for a basketball player, right, that's so important and it could be so lethal. And he was out for a short time. He came back, said he felt great before the game. They put him out there. He plays 14 minutes and plays really well and then says, this is worse than it was before. That is very concerning. Now, obviously, they're going to exercise on the side of caution right now to the extreme. 4 weeks, they're going to shut him down minimum. Look, if he comes back and he has, even if he sat out 6 weeks, 8 weeks, if he comes back and gets in 10 games even before the postseason, this is the deepest team in the NBA. They can weather the storm. They don't really care where they finish. They don't care if the Jazz or Clippers end up with better records than them. They really don't care. Number one, as of right now, there's no home court advantage at all because there's nobody in the buildings, one. Two, even if there was and they had to go on the road and steal one game in a series to get home court, they're not worried about that. They've got the best team in the NBA. They've got the deepest team in the NBA. The Nets might have something to say with that when it's all said and done, but certainly the Lakers right now have the most complete team, and they're not worried about Anthony Davis missing time. That's why you have so much depth. Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, LeBron can play the four. You added Marc Gasol. They've got so many options at that position. They're not worried about it. Right now, they've got to make sure when he does come back, he stays back, and if he does, you know, this is a team that's still going to be the favorite West. If you say, hey, he's affected by this into the playoffs, absolutely Utah and the Clippers, both of those teams could beat the Lakers if Anthony Davis is either not there or not 100% in a playoff series.
Tim, as we approach the midway point, who's your MVP and who are some guys that should be in the conversation?
Man, it's a long list, and it's growing, I think, because I think people have left a guy like Damian Lillard off of that list to this point. But you look up, and they're 18-10, and the way he's playing, he has to be in there. Steph Curry's in the discussion. Obviously, LeBron is in the discussion. But for me, Jokic would be in that discussion. For me right now, if I had a vote, it would be Joel Embiid. I look at their team, and I say, relative to expectations, now they added some shooting in the offseason, which they needed to address. But I still said, okay, but it's still Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And there are issues there because they don't have a big-time perimeter scorer that can go get a shot from anywhere on the floor. And all these other teams that we think can win it, they've got at least one guy like that, if not more. They don't really have that player. So you got to look at Embiid and say, well, how is he going to change? And he's changed dramatically. He's in better shape. His stamina, he can finish games by playing in the post. When you watch Philadelphia for the last several years, late in the game, you never knew where Joel Embiid would be. You know, is he too tired to bang and run the floor and get down in deep post position because it's hard to do that late in the game? Are you going to stay on the perimeter and just drift around and shoot a three, an ill-timed three? That's not what's going on this year. When they get into a tight situation, he is running up the floor full speed. He is plowing into guys, getting deep post position, and then he is going to work. And right now, the way he is operating offensively, it is the closest thing I have seen to Hakeem Olajuwon at his peak. That's how good Joel Embiid has been through this stretch. And also, I think they're 1-5 when he doesn't play, and they're in first place in the Eastern Conference. So for me, it would be Joel Embiid, but all of those other guys I mentioned certainly are in the discussion. And if Philadelphia hits a losing streak, or if the Lakers play great for the next 4 weeks without AD, I mean, LeBron could seize control of that thing, and it could be a wrap. But right now, Embiid has been, to me, one of the best stories in the NBA.
All right, great stuff, Tim. We appreciate it. We'll hopefully talk to you real soon as we get down the stretch of the NBA. Great. We appreciate it on Friday. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. My pleasure.
All right. Wonderful stuff from Tim Legler there. And that's the NBA report powered by Mercedes-Benz of White Plains. Mercedes-Benz of White Plains can make your dreams of owning a luxury vehicle a reality. Stop in or they'll come to you for an at-home test drive. You can visit pepeautogroup.com to shop all their luxury brands and the Macallan Double Cask 12-Year-Old Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. It's the perfect balance of American and European sherry season oak casks. Two worlds, one Macallan, imported by Edrington Americas. Please enjoy responsibly. And, of course, it's O-Rewards bonus points month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop in today for store-wide savings. Earn up to 3 times the points on select items throughout the store and online. Collect 150 points and get a $5 reward. If you're not an O-Rewards member yet, you can sign up today at O'ReillyAuto.com or at any O'Reilly Auto Parts store. It's fast. It's easy. It's free. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. And DCR presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance through Progressive protects your business and your dream. Choose from over 30 coverage options at progressivecommercial.com. All right, quickly back to the Mets. Rick, we stand by it. I love this. I absolutely love the signing of Taijuan Walker to the Mets. I think it gives them the best rotation in this division right now.
Love it completely. I mean, this changes everything for me. It was a good offseason. The fact that you just added him with Syndergaard coming back, I mean, it turns into, I mean, the Mets did a great job this offseason. They did. I mean, it stinks that we didn't get any of the guys, but I think that's our own fault because we had the expectations that we're going to, you know, go out and sign Springer and Bauer and Real Muto. That's our own fault. But the fact is, you got Lindor. I didn't expect, I mean, did you expect to get Carrasco in that deal?
No.
Well,
I mean, Chris, think about this. We got to go quickly here. You kept Stroman, which is big. You add Carrasco, and now you add Walker. You kept and or added three legitimate starters.
No, you did, Dave, and that's the part that you got to love about it. You're going to sign Lindor to an extension. You'll have the money to be able to pay Conforto. I mean, you feel good about the possibilities for the Mets this season, and you know at some point you're going to get Noah Syndergaard back. So, I mean, that rotation that's already deep is just going to become that much better. So, the Mets are in a really good spot with this signing. I mean, we fully expected them to be a playoff team, but I mean, now this is a situation where you're saying maybe they can compete with the big boys in the National League.
Maybe they can. All right, Santi. I think I've been terrific today, but I'm not trying to sway you at all. But let's go with the three stars.
Today's three stars of DCR. Number three.
You should know that these stars have already been determined long ahead. But anyway, star number three is going to go to Kyrie Irving and the Nets. Not just for beating the Lakers, but just for being Kyrie Irving and giving us gems like this.
I do it for the love.
Love you, Kyrie Irving.
Number two.
To anybody that's single and is in a relationship, find you somebody who loves you like Dan Orlovsky loves Carson Wentz.
I would put Carson Wentz into the MVP conversation. I believe in him and Indianapolis that much.
Number three, not going to Dave. It's going to Dave's, his plow guy.
Number one.
Oh, Mr. Plow. That's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow.
Guy's got quite the racket going on. Good for him. Go twice today. Go for it.
No, don't go twice. He's going to go with the double plow. He's going to charge me $240. I'm going to be incensed next week. We'll do it.
Yes, I don't want the double plow today.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.